Residents from Tathra on the New South Wales coast are beginning to return to their homes after the bushfire which tore through the town on Sunday. Some, though, don't have a home to return to. The fire destroyed 69 homes and damaged a further 39, though amazingly no lives were lost. This fire, along with the bushfires in Victoria and a cyclone in Darwin, has prompted the Greens to blame climate change. But is their timing right? Anthony Albanese is the Shadow Minister for Infrastructure and Transport. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Patricia.
When is the right time to talk about climate change and natural disasters? Have the Greens overreached? Have they been inappropriate?
Well, they have overreached and they have been inappropriate and they've been counterproductive. I think sometimes the Greens' self-righteousness does damage to the causes which they seek to advocate. There's no doubt that climate change is real. There's no doubt that there's an increase in the number of extreme weather events. That doesn't mean that every time there's a bushfire or a cyclone or an extreme weather event, it is the cause of climate change. These things have been around for some time. And our focus should be on the people who've been left homeless by the destruction of these homes at Tathra. Senator Di Natale today drew an analogy with accused the government of basically sounding like the National Rifle Association in the US, not wanting to talk about gun control. That's a pretty offensive analogy, particularly given that in this country, fortunately, we have a bipartisan position in support of decent guns policy that's supported across the parliament. I just think that Senator Di Natale was perhaps looking for a distraction from Saturday's result in Batman, but it's unfortunate that he will have put many people off. Well, in consideration of an appropriate consideration and a sober consideration of the impact of climate change.
Well, you mentioned Batman, and of course you have one of the seats that the Greens target, as they do Tanya Plibersek's seat, as well, I was about to say, as they do the seat of Melbourne, but they did and they won there, so that seems to be dealt with for them. There has been a case for a long time that this is inevitably a case of demographic change, that in your electorate, when you go, the seat will go as well. Do you think this result has changed that narrative?
Well, I've never had that view, as you know, Patricia. I think the idea that because people in an electorate are more likely through gentrification to be tertiary educated than they once were, is a recipe for Labor giving up on people who've been the beneficiaries of Labor governments. Labor governments have taken action to ensure that there is opportunity for people to be the first in their families, to become lawyers, to become doctors, to get professional qualifications. And that's led to a changing composition of the Australian community and workforce in general. But what we shouldn't do is give up on those people. Those people are part of the Labor base. Anyone who's concerned about social justice, who's concerned about better education and healthcare, not just for themselves, but for others in the community, who generations to come into, people who are concerned about the environment. That's part of a Labor agenda. And what Batman shows is that if we have the right candidate, which we did in Jed Carney, if you have the right campaign, which we did, led by Paul Erickson, then you can get a very good outcome. And indeed, you can have swings in areas like
so
North Kitt.
Is it then also a lesson to the Labor right who have stopped candidates, left-wing progressive candidates, from being pre-selected in the past?
Well, certainly what you need is the right candidates for particular seats. And there's no doubt that Jed Carney was an outstanding candidate. I visited the seat on a number of occasions with Jed. She related to the community there. She has an outstanding record in her working life as a nurse and then as a trade unionist, leading to her position as president of the ACTU in advocating for the needs of people. She understands the need to engage in political debate. One of the things about my electorate is that, yes, it is true that more people now need to be convinced than perhaps 30 or 40 years ago to vote Labor. They don't vote that way automatically. But there's nothing wrong with the discipline of having to convince people of the need, your worthiness to receive their vote. Jed Carney did that. In the last federal election, I received swings in places like Balmain and Rozelle and Haberfield, which have changed substantially over recent decades. And I think they want someone who'll stand up for them, who'll stand up for their interests. And people like Tanya Plibersek have done that in the electorate of Sydney as well.
Let's just get to a pretty interesting story this afternoon. Pauline Hanson has told Sky News this afternoon that she has an open mind to the government's company tax cut plan. She says she's not over the line, but she's clearly increasingly in talks with the government about this and that she's keeping an open mind. We know the government is lobbying the crossbench very hard on this. If the package is passed, will you have to revisit your position on it?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that battlers out there who Pauline Hanson purports to represent will be scratching their head. What we have is that Pauline Hanson's someone who's been prepared to give away penalty rates for some of the most underprivileged workers who rely upon them to put food on the table and pay their bills, and at the same time is prepared to consider a $65 billion tax break, much of which will go overseas to offshore owners of those companies, and much of which will also rely upon some form of trickle-down effect that we know isn't working. That's why real wages aren't increasing in this country under this government. So I think they will be very confused as to the difference between Pauline Hanson's rhetoric and her actions and those of her fellow senators if she indeed passes the government's company tax cut.
But if it does pass, it changes the framework for Labor. You would have to reconsider whether you would keep the corporate tax cuts, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm not working on hypotheticals. What we're determined to do is to defeat this legislation.
And if Pauline how are you going to do that? Because we know that the government has hired former head of mining lobby group, the Minerals Council of Australia, to lobby the crossbench. How are you going to counter that?
Well, we'll counter that through the argument and through the arguments of not just us, but working people who'll be contacting, I'm sure, their senators. And when I walk around, and I'm at an event in my electorate tonight, I don't think many people will be coming up there saying, gee, you need to pass those corporate tax cuts. Indeed, that is yet to happen to me anywhere in my electorate at all.
It might have something to do with where you mix. On another topic, the government's Ensuring Integrity Bill will soon come before the Senate. This aims to introduce a public interest test around the merger of unions, particularly when it comes to unions' compliance with industrial law. Now, if a union has broken the law, why should it be allowed to merge with another union?
Well, these are issues that are determined by union members. If unions break a particular law, then they're, of course, accountable for that. The idea that it is the government that should decide which unions workers can join or not is a massive infringement on the civil liberties and on the freedoms of workers to organise. We know that this government would prefer that no one was in a union, that no one had any industrial rights. But the fact is that all those things that workers enjoy, including workers' comp, occupational health and safety, leave, annual leave, superannuation, all of these things have been fought for by working
sure, we're not
people
talking about
through
the,
their trade union.
We're not talking about the right of unions to exist. We're talking about criminality here. The government
this
also wants,
just,
but the government also wants that. People who have been convicted of serious criminal offences to be prevented from being union officials. What's wrong with that?
Well, the government is obsessed by attacking unions. That's the fact of the matter.
But on that issue, people who've been convicted of serious criminal offences, should they be running unions?
Criminal law should be dealt with under the Appropriate Crimes Act. What this government seeks to do is to argue that somehow I've never heard them praise a senior trade union official in Australia, and that's most unfortunate because people go into those jobs overwhelmingly. Yes, like in any other profession, including public broadcasting, you will have a bad egg, and that should be dealt with. But overwhelmingly, people go into the trade union movement because they want to improve the working lives of their fellow workers.
Just on another issue, Bill Shorten pledged to give the Catholic school sector an extra $250 million in the first 2 years of a Labor government, and this was in the final weeks of the Batman campaign. That pledge has led to a pretty big fight between the government and the opposition. The Education Minister, Simon Birmingham, suggested yesterday that the Catholic sector's support was bought. Was it?
Well, that's an absurd proposition by Simon Birmingham, and he mustn't have been paying attention.
But it's not a needs-based funding model if you're bankrolling a sector, is it? Needs-based funding.
We have made it very clear, that Labor would restore the funding that was agreed to in the original Gonski model, and overwhelmingly, something in the order of nine in every $10 of that will go to public schools on the basis of need. And we have said that we'd restore that funding. There's nothing new about that. And the fact is that Malcolm Turnbull's cuts to public schools make up 86% of those cuts. So the 86% we've said we'll put back into public schools, and we've said we'll put back the 12% of the cuts that come from Catholic schools and the 2% that come from independent schools. I would have thought it's an extraordinary proposition for the Education Minister to argue that this was somehow a new policy. He mustn't have been paying any attention to the significant campaign that Labor's been running over these issues.
Just to finally, I know you're speaking at a domestic violence service in your electorate tonight. What are your concerns around the support that they're getting?
Well, I'm speaking at the annual general meeting of Rape and Domestic Violence Services Australia. They're based in my electorate. The fact is that on average, at least one woman a week is still killed by a partner or former partner. One in four Australian women has experienced physical or sexual violence by an intimate partner. These figures are quite shocking. They remain. I think the government botched up the handling of the 1800 Respect number that this service used to receive funding to provide, and that's most unfortunate. They were prepared to stand up. They're an openly feminist service that provide that support to women at that great time of need. And they do a fantastic job. And I think the government should do everything we can, regardless across the spectrum, to deal with this scourge, which is a real blight on our society.
Anthony Albanese, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.